You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 16 July. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, Mia Kruger, earnings season in the U.S. We'll touch on that. Kweki Koyman from Denker Capital. Standard Bank buying Liberty. Maybe they're just trying to get rid of Liberty's been a poor performer. Then Duncan McAllister, transferring listed shares to an offshore exchange. It's a little technical, but SARS has changed the rules, which makes it a little expensive. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. SARS puts a crimp in crypto arbitrage. In essence, every time you want to take some cash off above the 1 million, you have to actually now reapply. And the arbitrages are literally usually taking 100,000, 200,000 at a time. And you can still do it. It just means a lot more paperwork. Business day, mining is intact amid unrest, says Mineral Council SA. Export services through Durban Harbour are yet to resume, but Richards Bay coal terminal is working. I got to say, when I grew up in Durban, we would count the number of boats in the harbour, and sometimes you would see 12, and that would be a lot. Right now, according to VesselFinder.com, there are over 20, which tells us that things are definitely backing up in the harbour. Morning markets, a bunch of red. US, we got the S&P off a third of a percent, NASDAQ down 0.7. Asia, red. Sydney off a couple of points, 0.02%. Tokyo down just over 1%. Gold, $1,829 an ounce. Rand, a few cents weaker from yesterday, 14.56. Top 40, looking for a green open, about 100 points up. That's 0.15%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Checking now with Mia Kruger, Director Kruger International. Mia, morning. Appreciate the early morning time. Earnings season in the U.S. Kicked off this month. This week. What am I saying? We've seen some of the banks coming already. Your sense? I mean, expectation. We're looking for a fairly record-setting earnings season in the U.S. Are we not?
Yes. Morning, Simon. You mentioned the banks. I mean, that's been pretty, as I can say, boring so far. We've seen, you know, Morgan Stanley, which has the largest stockbroking unit in the world. They've come out with very strong stockbroking numbers and investment banking side. All the banks had a bit of a dip on the interest sort of banking, but the rest of the banks mostly made their profits due to the fact that they wrote back their provisioning. So yes. It was really only Morgan Stanley that stood out in terms of, doing more business, and that was on the stockbroking side. But let's get back to that expectations that you referred to. Because historically, we were used to sort of earnings beating about 3 to 5%. And that actually means that the earnings came out better than the analysts did all their workings on and their expectations on. But over the last year, we've actually seen the average earnings coming in about 18%. Better than expected by analysts. And the last quarter, in quarter one of 2020, it was 28%. And this is all according to FactSet, which keeps very good data on this. Now, we should all remember that 2020 was the close down worldwide for COVID, and that is not known the best numbers to really compare to. But nevertheless, you know, we still saw slightly fuzzy sort of expectations made public by the companies, and it was difficult for the analysts to really estimate. But if we just consider what we're seeing this quarter, you know, if we see the S&P delivering the same earnings that we had last quarter, we're actually expecting the beats to be not close to the 65% that growth that we are that analysts are expecting, but closer to the 80% compared to last year, which is much, much larger. Now, if we just look and put all of this into perspective, as I say, we need to keep our heads straight and compared to 2019, we are still seeing earnings growth of over 8% and earnings beats of over 8% compared to the long-term trend, as I said, of between 3 to 5. So earnings are still very strong out of the US, even compared to pre-COVID growth rates. Now, one of the companies you asked me that stood out for me so far is we had Nike report about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And Nike came out with staggering results. You know, they had beat estimates by over 80%, and they actually had very solid numbers. They you know, they showed us that their digital sales were up from 2020, which was obviously the start of the massive digital drive globally, by 41%. But even compared to 2019, it was up over 147%. So those are massive numbers. And then just comparing in the US, their major market, they had a very strong growth in the US, and that was up over 51, well, let me just see the numbers here that I put down. The main market growth was still up significantly compared to what it was the previous year, and then 2019. I can't find my number for some reason, but they still had a very strong number compared to 2019, which just shows us that the expectations for the US companies on the reopening trade and then just on the digital staying at home trade are both still very strong in play. And we will most likely see those numbers, or the numbers this quarter, being driven by those two trends still carrying on and picking up from the reopening trade as well.
I mean, Nike is almost a quick last question. Nike is almost the Apple of apparel, you know, at leisure wear and the like. They are that they've reinvented over the last couple of decades. They are an awesome company.
They are. They are absolutely the star of the athleisure and the apparel businesses. And you know, there were a tug between them and Adidas for a couple of years, but that's really now been shadowed by the strong results that we've seen from Nike. So an exciting time, and I think we can expect a very good earnings season.
Yeah, absolutely. They really have. And even Under Armour, I know a lot of people were bullish on Under Armour. Hasn't happened.
Yes.
Mia Kruger, Director, Kruger International, appreciate the insights this morning. We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At StanLib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insight into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider, license number 719.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with our Kuki Koyman, portfolio manager, Denker Capital. Kuki, appreciate the early morning. Two sort of questions around this, one around bank assurance. But before we get to that, Standard Bank getting a fairly good deal here in Liberty. I mean, it's a discount to group equity value as per director's valuation on a business, Liberty, that truthfully has struggled.
Yes. So Standard Bank are certainly getting a good price. As you say, the discount to embedded value and actually net asset value.
Mm-hmm.
But Liberty has actually been a poor performer. It has not actually been able to grow premium over the last 5 years. Its embedded value growth has been very, very poor, especially even more so if you compare it to another turnaround, Momentum.
Yep.
But then also, obviously, Sanlam has grown it at I think 15% or so. And Liberty 3% or so. So it's been a dog, and I think it's largely because of its trademark, its brand. It's an old brand. It's most of the client segment that it used to have emigrated or are retiring. So, and Standard Bank, since, I don't know if you recall, since Jack and Maria's time when they sent in Miles Ruck to turn it around, Liberty haven't been able to do it. So, okay, so Standard Bank might be buying a dog here. So the shareholders are putting down more capital into something that Standard Bank has been trying to turn around for 10 years and not succeeded. So why should they succeed now? So I suppose having 100% control and it now directly reporting inside, you know, you're going to reshake things up. that the operation is going to be a challenge, and so hence the good price.
Yeah, I mean, in essence, as you said, they'll now be reporting, I imagine, directly to some Shabalala CEO there at Standard Bank. It's also, I mean, I was pondering around with the Old Mutual getting rid of the most of their last remaining Nedbank shares. The whole 20 years ago, and even in the late 90s, all the talk was around this bank assurance, the tie-ups between banks and insurers. And it my sense is it hasn't really worked as the banks had hoped it would. And this is kind of maybe in a sense also Standard Bank a lost roll of that dice. Can they be the local bank that really makes it work?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I well recall 80s, all the conferences we used to go to, and Fortis and ING, and everybody was claiming bank assurance as the new way to... but two things have happened. One is obviously capital levels, capital that you need to hold has increased a lot. So that has made that broke up, you know, the ING model and the others. And also, more and more so, as to what do you do with your distribution channel? Do you go sort of offer your clients best of breed or multiple number of insurers, or do you just tie yourself to one insurer, which in the case of Liberty, if it didn't work, you still had to sell it because that was what you had. And now even more so. So it is interesting having a distribution channel and then having your own what they call product factory in as an insurer does bring along capital constraints. So it's a lower ROE business. And banks these days want to try and increase the ROE because of the pressure on net interest margins. So... you know, this is one of those where I think they had to do it. They tried to most probably find a buyer and they couldn't. And they said, okay, we're going to make the best of it because it's not the ideal strategy doing bank assurance and tying down your distribution channel that you've built up, you know, your branches and everybody else. But look, the positives are they want to use it for the Pan-African strategy. Yeah. It's very important. Liberty haven't really succeeded or based on the profit contribution from Africa. So in that regard, it should help them. And you're going to mostly revitalize the brand and you get a wider client reach. So, but it's going to be hard work. And in fact, Standard Bank on a presentation said it's going to cost in 650 million rand in the first 2 years to do this.
Oh, okay, that is big news. I remember that bank assurance, early 90s. I banked with Nedbank. Yep. Old Mutual sold me a retirement annuity. Mutual and Federal sold me my short-term insurance. And the idea was great, but I think customers have gotten smarter to that. Kuki Kuman, Denker Capital, appreciate your early morning this morning. A poll which we were asking on our Twitter and our LinkedIn profiles. As you say, Standard Bank made an offer to buy out those shares. The Liberty share price is where it was in 1994. That's after the jump of yesterday. Is this just Standard Bank delisting an underperforming business unit? I'm being polite today. Cookie wasn't quite as polite. You can have your vote. You can have your say on our Twitter and our LinkedIn profiles. We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At StanLib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insight into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider, license number 719.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Duncan McAllister. He's a consultant at Weber Wentz. So Duncan, appreciate the early morning time. Changes to SARS, a little technical in a sense, but I mean, the short version is in the olden days, before March in a sense, but the Rand depreciated, buying dual-listed shares on an offshore exchange instead of local. Certainly there were some advantages to that. And this would be, for example, a Anglo-American which trades both in Joburg and in London. But SARS has come along and essentially made those changes, which has fairly real tax implications for investors.
Yes. Morning, Simon. What's actually happened now is if you want to transfer your shares, say, from the JSE to an offshore exchange, SARS is now going to trigger a capital gain or loss on when you transfer them. So you'll be deemed to have sold your shares at market value and reacquired them at the same market value. So you'll get a step up in your base cost, but it'll come at the expense of the capital gain or, you know, that you would have had to pay.
And the challenge is, of course, is that in this scenario, if there is a capital gain and therefore a tax liability, you didn't actually realize any cash because you did that transfer. Is the solution just to, if you're looking to externalize, if you're looking to ultimately perhaps hold, as we use an example, Anglo American in London, is start by buying it there and don't do the local and then transfer across. Just, you know, offshore the money and buy in London.
Yes. One of the advantages of buying on an offshore exchange directly instead of buying the same share on South African exchanges, the way that the CGT's worked out. So, for instance, if you're an individual or a non-trading trust and you buy your shares on an offshore exchange, when you sell those shares, you're going to work out the gain, let's say, in dollars. Mm-hmm. So, let's say, paid 100, you sold them for 120. You'll have a $20 gain, which you'll then translate to Rand at the rate ruling at the time of disposal. Whereas if you buy the same share on a South African exchange, your base cost would be fixed in Rand and your proceeds will be in Rand. So essentially you're going to pay CGT on the currency depreciation.
Gotcha. I mean, that is one of the big benefits, because obviously it's Anglo-American or whatever it might be. It is the same stock. But if you buy it in ZAR, the RAND move also ultimately is taxable. But if I buy it in sterling or euros or dollars, as you suggest, the movement in the currency, I benefit from that, but I don't get taxed on that.
Correct. That's it.
And this new ruling is in place. As I understand from the note you sent out, it came into effect on the 1st of March. So this is not something coming down the line. This is already here and happening.
Yes. Yeah. As I say, it's just if you transfer them. If you hold your shares, you're not going to transfer. Well, there wouldn't be any implication. I think SARS has probably done this because of a lack of control. You know, once the shares move outside South Africa, it's, you know, reporting requirements and all that sort of thing apply. So
I get you. I was wondering why, but I see the point there. As you say, once they're offshore, they kind of lose the picture, whereas here they say, as soon as you take it off, there is a tax event. And for the listeners, that's the important point. If you're going to be moving the shares off, actually have a good look and perhaps start offshore rather than local, because those changes they'll have tax implications. Duncan McAllister, consultant, Weber Wenzel, appreciate your time this morning. That's it for today. I polled yesterday on our social media, LinkedIn and Twitter. We were chatting with Chris Rule from CoreShares around global property, and particularly how it had fundamentally changed, how sort of retail was no longer the big sort of section. Neither was in particular sort of office. And he mentioned Simon Property, which, you know, used to be capped at 10% because it was actually more than 10%, and it's now down to 5%. It's kind of almost become techie. It's got data centers and logistics centers for e-commerce and the like. Question we asked you was, are you buying offshore property? And just under a quarter of you were like, yep, absolutely. A little over half were still worried about the risks out there, saying that the risks definitely still remain. The rest of you were saying you've already got some. I do. I have. In fact, I have the CoreShares, the GL prop. It's done okay. It's paid some decent dividends. But I do like how it's changed. Now, that's the key point of indices and therefore passive ETFs that track them, is that as sort of trends change, the index will change, and therefore your ETF will change accordingly. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. That's it for the week. Remember, we're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast available from 7 a.m. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Cordora, Eleanor, for helping me put the show together, for you for listening, my guests for their early morning contribution. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.